Hi, Dave. My name's Ian. I just wanted to say hello to you.
Hi.
All right. And normally I introduce myself to the folks out there first. I thought, you know what, you're here. I should introduce myself to you first.
Okay.
That seems a polite thing to do.
Sure.
Then we're going to turn it over and I'll introduce myself to the audience.
Okay. Doesn't seem redundant at all.
What doesn't seem redundant?
Introducing yourself to me.
Yeah.
As I already know you.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. Okay. You're right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'll just go straight into the introduction of of myself to the audience.
Yep.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen.
The revolution will not be podcasted.
Yeah, you got your adorable little bit for the beginning of the show. That's good. Hi, everybody. I'm Ian Boothby.
I'm David Dedrick.
And this is Sneaky Dragon episode 3,529.
Wow.
But
someone lost count.
Some of them didn't turn out well. Ones we've put out there, it's 246.
That's correct.
You're right. But those other ones we have print style put in a vault.
Yeah.
And upon our deaths, that vault shall be thrown in the sea.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
With us.
With us in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, that sounds all right.
Two birds with one stone.
Oh, my God. What disappointed future pirates who are like, oh, it looks like it's going to be some treasure. And they open it up and it's our corpses. And then some podcasts of that aren't good enough to put on the air.
Yeah.
And they will be.
Really says something.
Oh, yar, they'll say.
Really says something.
And then they'll die of scurvy because there won't be vitamin C in the future.
None at all?
Nope.
No limes?
Nope.
How about oranges?
Not in the future.
How about oranges?
Of course not. It's the future. Where are they going to get oranges in the future?
Lemons.
Yeah, they'll be lemons.
Okay. It's not that great a future.
It's not that great a future.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this on Saturday, you still have time to come see me at a show in the evening times. If you're listening to this in the afternoon. If you're listening to this Saturday night, dice. But Saturday, pull out your earbuds and head on down to a Little Mountain Gallery in Vancouver at 8 o'clock.
The
doors open. 8:30 the show is. It's Write Club. We're going to be doing a show. Audience members dress up as their favorite writers. We recreate new works by those authors, and it's always a lot of fun. And Dave usually dresses up sometimes as a lady.
When
sometimes as a snazzy gentleman.
Yes.
We don't know what he's going to dress up as tonight. Tonight to you and me, we live in the past, you live in the present, or perhaps you live in the future, and you've already missed this. We all exist in multiple timelines at the same time.
Yeah, I am so confused.
Well, my theory is time isn't linear, Dave, and I think this podcast proves it.
What do you think time is? Not linear?
No, I think we perceive it as linear because we're in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if at any point, you know, we can remove ourselves from that, we will see that time is not linear.
Sure.
And everything is happening and, you know, it's kind of a complete situation.
I think time is stacked and it's all happening at exactly the same moment.
You mean stacked in a really sexy way? Like a
1980s? No. Not like Jessica
Rabbit.
Feeling
really
stacked.
Good because the time is stacked.
Yeah.
Okay, smarty, go to a party.
Is that actual?
Yeah, it's rapping from the 80s. Go ahead, continue.
I think time is, like, instead of being a line, like a horizontal line, it's a vertical line. And it's all happening simultaneously.
Okay, is there a horizontal line as well?
No.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's a vertical line. then it's just a line.
Yeah.
It's not horizontal or vertical. If it's just a line, then it's just a line. There is no horizontal or vertical. If there's not a vertical line, you can't have a horizontal line because there's nothing to compare it to.
Oh, I see. Okay. It's just a line.
It is just a line.
Okay.
So you think it's stacked?
Yeah.
Do you think time travel is possible?
If that's true, then yes.
Okay. What would happen if you travel through time? Would you affect everything at the same time?
No, because it's all happening at the same time.
Okay. So, all right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Once again, it's quite hot out. And so we put on our thinking caps, which are unfortunately made of wax, and they have melted onto our heads. And we are a little bit of a mess. But that's fine. Dave, I think, might have Olympic fever, and there ain't no cure for that.
You know what? I have not been that into it this year. Like, I think, you know, last time that we had the Olympics, I'm not talking about Sochi, because I wasn't really into Sochi that much either. But when 2012, I was in England.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Great Britain when Great Britain had their Olympics. So it was pretty easy to get into the Olympic spirit because I was right there.
Did you see anything Olympic-y?
No.
Did you see, were people Olympic spirited?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it was kind of the same thing.
More than when they're in Vancouver?
We talked about this, but it was sort of...
We probably talked about it years ago.
It's fine. So don't worry. It's all happening at the same time, so it's okay.
That's true, it is. It is actually, that is true, because all of our episodes are still available.
Yeah.
They're all in the same place.
Sure.
They are all stacked.
Yeah.
Holy shit, you're right. Your theory is goddamned right. iTunes proves your theory of time being stacked.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Okay, go ahead.
So it was when we went there, everyone was mad. Just like here. Before the...
Well, they say mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun.
They do.
So were they out in the midday sun?
Noonday sun, I believe. I don't know. I'm just... Anyway, so I don't know if there's... I think that's about like the colonial British, not the British living in... Although it does get pretty hot there too. I don't know.
So you're talking about the cloned British? Is that like a separate
colonial
Britain that's just cloned?
Colonial.
Next to it?
Colonial.
Colonial?
Yeah.
Okay, not colonial.
Not
cloned. Because colonial is the duplicate Britain that's right next to it.
Right next to the other one.
Yeah.
When we were there, everyone was mad, and there was a big scandal because the government or the whoever was running the Olympics had not hired enough security to cover all the facilities and all the venues and the amount of people they expected.
You're scared of terrorism.
Everyone is. And so...
which means, good job, terrorists. Good. Everyone's scared of you.
Yeah.
Job well done.
Well, I think...
Pat you on the back. If you want to create some terror...
Sure.
You did it. You know what, guys? And you did it so well, you can knock it off now. You know what? Leave on a high, terrorists. That's, I think, the terrorist problem. Sure. Is terrorists stick around too long.
Too long.
Like, once they've terrorized, fuck off. You're done. You know, and everyone will remember your terror. Has like that, oh, that was some great terror. But now you keep terrorizing and then it's lame. And
it just kind of becomes a flat.
Some guy tries to leave a car, a bomb in a car, and he gets caught and he's an idiot. And it's like, now you look, you know. It's like like a really shitty fourth album. And you're like, you should have just ended with your first album.
Mm-hmm.
Wrap it up.
Yeah.
But please continue.
Sure. So there's a lot of like, you know, talk about this and that. And then also people were upset because there's a lot of development in the East End of London, which is where a lot of the venues were built for the Olympics. So there was a lot of development there and the knocking down of history and the da-da-da-da, which, you know, it's terrible. But
especially there when they've actually got history. Like, it's annoying in Vancouver when they knock stuff down. But really, I mean, it's like 100 years old tops. And the stuff there, it's just, oh, yeah, this is where, you know, Shakespeare used to come here to take a poop.
I was going to say Charles Dickens came to take a crap, and it was exactly the same.
Oh, they use they can use the same one.
Our minds
they
fall
exist
in the same
different
gutter.
Times, we so both... they'll never be. Hey, Dickens, get out of there! It's like, who are you? I'm Shakespeare. What are you still alive for? Oh no! And then he realizes
I think
shouldn't
you're
be alive, and he turns
forgetting that they existed at the same time. Anyway,
that's true. All writers lived at the same time. Yep.
Stacked.
In a stacked line.
Yeah. So
which you can tell if you go to iTunes and try to download an audiobook. They're all stacked on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Available at the same time.
Yeah. So but once the Olympics started, then everyone got really excited about the Olympics. Like, there was still some complaining. Like, for some reason, people were under the mistaken idea that the Olympics meant tons of people were going to come there to see the Olympics. That's not how the Olympics work. The Olympics means that the world is watching you. Not the world is coming to see you. So you don't get like a whole ton of visitors, but you get a few. And then you get like the attention of the world on your city. And everyone's like, wow, that looks like a great place. I want to go visit that place.
Right.
Like, I think Vancouver, before the Winter Olympics in 2010, was probably outside of most people's... They didn't really know it. You know, unless they particularly wanted to look up Vancouver. Most people in the world didn't really know where Vancouver was.
A little push after Expo 86.
A little push. But not...
Not huge.
Not like the Olympics.
No,
because it wasn't on television.
The world doesn't cover the world's fairs.
And yeah, that's right. Like, there was no news. There wasn't like a big sports thing going on where everyone's like seeing the skyline of the city. And, you know, so everyone's like, wow, it's a beautiful place. It's a city beside mountains. They didn't realize it's a city beside mountains, which means we're all trapped by mountains. And real estate is really expensive here. So come here.
I do think it's actually the opposite where you're saying people don't go to the Olympics. People do go to a World's Fair, especially, I think, what happened was because it was a World's Fair in a place that spoke English, so, you know.
Pretty well.
Like,
we're pretty good at it.
Oh, this seems like, what, is it really safe? Yeah. Everyone speaks English? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the dollar like? Oh, it's not great. You can, your money's worth a lot here. Oh, fuck it. Well, let's go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we got a nice tourism, you know, influx.
Yeah. But there's touristy things to see. Whereas with the Olympics, you know, it's very difficult to get tickets for, like, we wanted to go when it was in England or Great Britain, to be more PC.
It's not PC, it's just accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's just less offensive to say Great Britain than England, because then just people accurate. In Scotland are like, well, we're not English.
That's
right. We're Scottish. The people in Wales go,
by the way, do we have any listeners in Wales? If so, please write in and complain.
Complain about that.
At sneaky_dragon.
Then we'll know you're listening.
Yeah.
Which is always nice. So I kind of remember where I was now. Anyway, so in Great Britain, what was I talking about?
You and your family were terrorists. You were trying to blow up something when you went to the Olympics.
Don't do that to me.
Okay.
What was I talking about?
You weren't even listening. I was listening. You were talking about you were there, and that people don't go to the Olympics. The world is watching.
Oh, yes, because when we were going to go to Great Britain, we tried to buy tickets online, and it's just impossible to buy tickets if you lived outside of Great Britain. It was like they just weren't for sale. And then when we were there, it was equally difficult to buy them because we weren't from Great Britain.
There wasn't scalpers and whatnot?
I guess, but like... Because the problem here with scalpers where they were selling tickets that weren't real.
Yeah.
And so you'd go to the venue with your scalped tickets, and then you'd discover that you got scalped, and then you got sent away without going to see the event. So, you know, it's kind of a... Maybe the one we wanted to see, like dressage and cross-country, maybe wouldn't have really attracted the you know, kind of scoundrels.
Was there dressage this year?
Yep. Yeah, very early on.
Man, yeah, I didn't see any
same
of that.
Same with the cross-country, or three-day eventing and stuff like that. That was all done early on. Yeah,
I wonder if Mitt Romney had won the election, if there'd be a lot more attention placed on dressage.
Mitt Romney, yeah, possible.
Yeah, that would have really just blown up dressage.
Well,
especially if someone did a terrorist attack on a horse, that would have really blown up.
Dressage would have
just a bomb up the butt. Kaboom!
You're really obsessed with
that.
You're really obsessed.
That'd be
with
pretty
this.
Shocking.
Yeah, it would.
Again,
be.
I'm not trying to give terrorists ideas.
You really are.
My advice to terrorists, once again, is. You're done. You did it. You did. You've done your job.
Over with?
Well done, you.
If they have a totally different, you know, gears to grind? What if they have a totally different axe to grind?
What would be something to make a terrorist mad?
Well, I just mean like a different group of people that want a different region free from whatever is bugging the current terrorists.
Oh, okay. Just write some nasty tweets. Do that. That's how you do it nowadays.
Yeah.
That's how you terrorize, is you go on Twitter and just write something cruel.
Not that effective.
Oh, well, are you kidding me? A lot of people got very upset at tweets. People get mad at tweets, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
Even madder than they do at terrorism, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Yeah, I guess it can affect. I mean, I was just reading a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and it was very interesting, talking about people who, you know, said the wrong thing at the wrong time and... blew up on the internet. And...
I was thinking about that today because there was a video online of a baseball going into, you know, as it does, going into the stands, and a little girl is trying to catch the baseball, and a lady, and it's kind of between the lady who's like reaching for it and her, and then the little girl gets it, and the lady grabs the ball out of her hand, and like goes sitting back down, and she's so proud, and so people are sharing that, and I was like, ah, good for outing her, and then I was like, nah, maybe not, maybe this is the best thing in the world, you know, there's a bit of you that goes like, that's good, and then there's a bit of you that goes, this will go bad.
Yeah,
this isn't worth it for the ball. But the little girl is sad, and she's walking up the stands. It's like a perfect.
Yeah,
you know. Oh, you're the worst person in the world of the moment.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And she may then go home and do charity work and be a great person.
You kind of doubt it from that behavior.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's hard to know where you're expressing disapproval and you're just piling on. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing for a group of people in the maybe in the stadium to go boo, you know, and hiss, give her the ball.
Right.
Give her the ball. Give her the ball. That's different than the entire world telling, you know. And the thing is that it's never enough just to say, shame on you. It's got to be, I'm going to get you fired.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I wish you were raped. Or whatever, you know, the worst thing you could imagine. You have to wish on that person, you know. So, you know, so someone like this woman named Justine Sacco is interesting. She was going, I guess, on vacation to South Africa, and she said, "Going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white."
Yeah.
Okay. Not the greatest joke, but obviously she meant it as a joke. She didn't seriously think I'm going to get AIDS, and I'm not going to get AIDS because I'm white. It was a joke on white privilege.
Right.
You know, 1.2 million retweets later, she'd lost her job in an 8-hour.
No, I agree with that. She should have lost her job.
Really?
She, 100%. I've got no doubt she should have.
Why?
Because she was a PR person.
Yeah.
And if you're a PR person who doesn't realize this is a dumb thing to do, you're a bad PR person, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
if
I
it
mean,
was any other job, look, if she's working at Starbucks, if she was doing anything else, but if the job is, what do you do? I'm in public relations.
Yeah.
Here's the tweet I'm putting out right now.
Sure.
No, you're done.
To my 30 friends on Twitter. I mean, I know that it's a public place. And she probably didn't realize just how much a little tweet can travel.
If you're working outside for a rape crisis center and you write a funny rape joke, then you should probably not. You'll probably get fired from the rape crisis center. If you're a firefighter and you're writing a joke about how fun arson is, then you're probably going to get fired from the job as a firefighter. Like, it's just one of those.
I have to disagree with you that she should have lost her job.
Why?
I don't know. It just feels like that's.
I think she'd lose her job not out of a shame thing, but because she's...
Well, she was shamed out of her job. Because it wasn't...
No, it's not
shame. She didn't lose her job.
No, because she's shitty at her job. She's a shitty PR person. If she is posting something like that publicly,
well,
she shows the bad judgment.
Okay.
And there's other people that could take that job who will clearly be better.
That's not why she lost her job. That wasn't that she's shitty at PR. She lost her job because of this sort of internet outrage forced the company to fire her.
Right.
It wasn't that they were unhappy with the job she was doing.
Well, yeah, they were, because she's a PR person who just got incredibly bad PR. She brought a lot of bad PR to the company. So she should be fired because she's bad at PR.
But there's the thing, though. Why was that so bad, what she wrote? Is it so terrible that it deserves, like, does she deserve to be, let's say it's, she's making $50,000 a year at her job.
Right.
So she should be fined $50,000 for that happening to her?
Okay, you're working at the drugstore.
Okay.
Okay, and you get on the microphone and you decide to do a joke about AIDS on the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, just this person wants a condom.
Sure.
Guess they don't want to get AIDS. Nah, just kidding. They're white. Okay, and I'm at the drugstore and that's me.
Yeah.
Do I come back to the drugstore the next day? No, I don't, because I just publicly did a joke, you know, that shows I'm
Yeah, but you did it in the drugstore.
In work.
What if you did it just with your friends in a room,
right,
and one of them recorded it and put it up onto Facebook? Should you lose your job at the drugstore?
That's a different situation.
But that's her situation. She wasn't tweeting as the company she worked for. She was tweeting as herself.
Who was she tweeting to?
Just, she had 30
no,
followers.
No, 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 no. That's not who she's tweeting to.
Okay.
She's tweeting to anyone on Twitter
okay.
that wants... Okay, say someone writes the word AIDS in Twitter.
Yeah.
Then her tweet comes up.
Okay.
That comes up. You know, it's not just to those 30 people.
Yeah.
And also, there's other ways that you can, like, read stuff like that online. But she decided to make a public joke. Public joke.
Yeah.
Here it is out to the public. Anyone can read it. Because when I do a joke on Twitter,
yeah,
you know, it's not just the followers I have that can read it. Other people can retweet it if they like it. There's lots of other ways for it to get out there. But I'm definitely making a joke to the public.
Yeah.
And if I'm doing something in public relations,
okay,
that's my job.
Yeah.
Then yes, you could come at me and go, no, you shouldn't work for such and such. I've done work for, like, kids' TV shows.
Yeah.
If I do something that's inappropriate for someone who works at a kids' TV show, for the most part, I sign contracts that, you know, for certain things that say I can only do, you know, I can't say if I'm working for a company, you know, I can't shit on the company publicly.
Yeah.
There's things like that.
Sure.
So it's things
sure.
like that.
Yeah.
And I think in this case, if you're a public relations person, make a public statement like that, you're a bad public relations person, they should hire another public relations person than you.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I disagree, because I feel like she didn't lose her job because she's a bad public relations person.
She is clearly a bad public relations person.
But that's not why she lost her job, though.
But she is, as well.
Okay. But
so she
that's not
should
why she
lose
lost her job,
job regardless.
But that's not why she lost her job.
Okay. She lost
She could have been the world's worst public relations person and kept working there if 1.2 million people hadn't retweeted. The other interesting thing about that
story... How did
it
catch on fire, by the way?
I don't know. Someone found it and...
Because you're saying she only had 30...
Yeah.
30, so how did a million people end up with it?
It just kind of took off without her knowing.
So
she didn't even know
public.
About it. She didn't even know about it.
Right,
like she was on a plane.
You're proving your own what my point here, which is like when you say make something public.
Oh, I know it's public.
A million people can't.
I agree with you. It's public. Yes, I agree with you. It's public. But so is Facebook. So is anywhere that you put anything.
Facebook is actually a little trickier for that.
Okay.
A little bit trickier.
Sure. But you can things that you do if you have private or public on.
Yeah, you can choose.
Which most people do because they don't realize that there are controls.
Okay.
So most of and it. automatically makes you public when you start Facebook.
Okay.
You have to choose to put it into private. Mm-hmm. So your pictures and your postings and stuff like that can be shared a long way away from you without you knowing.
Right.
And same with Twitter. What about the woman, and this was on Facebook, what about the woman who was lost her job, well, two women who lost her job for pretending to scream in a military cemetery? Should they have lost their jobs? Their job was, mm-hmm. they looked after autistic children. Mm-hmm. Should they have lost their jobs for pretending to scream and be disrespectful in a...
Oh, because it said, do not scream?
It said, do not make noise, and sort of, you know.
And they were doing the screaming?
They were pretending to scream, yeah, for a photograph.
I don't know. Are there other people? I don't know.
Because, you know, that's... So they lost her. Not only do you lose your job, though. Yeah. I mean, not only does this lady...
I don't think people should be publicly shamed. I think that's...
Well, they are, though, right? When you're being retreated that many times and people are calling for you to be fired, mm-hmm. and calling you names and saying you're the worst person who ever lived.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's anonymous, reprehensible garbage in the comments constantly. Yeah.
That's my problem with it. If, you know, and that's the thing I'm saying, like, it has nothing to do with whether she's a good or bad PR person, or it's nothing to do with whether this lady was a good or bad caretaker right. of autistic children. The reason they lost their jobs is because people wanted them to lose their jobs because they're mad at them. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that's why they lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. And then the reason that they, you know, the reason they got to spend, you know, a year or more dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder is because they were hated for a year or more.
Yeah, it's a completely ugly situation.
So, you know, and it's not always, and it's so weird. Like, there's another story in there. There's two guys, they're at a tech conference, mm-hmm. and someone on stage was talking about a dongle.
Yes.
And the guys snickered to each other because someone said dongle.
Yep.
A lady in front of them took a picture of them and tweeted that they made her feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And accused them of
triggering her
sexual misconduct or something. You know what I mean? Like that they were making her uncomfortable because they were laughing at sexual. You know, so
okay.
They, once again, internet shame, lost their jobs, mm-hmm. and you know, lost their tech jobs.
Right.
Once again, it doesn't seem to me. It feels like those are punishments that far exceed the crime, if there even is a crime. And snickering. Yeah. Sniggering childishly at the word dongle.
Right. These are, of course, really, you know, I mean, how do I actually say that?
These are the extremes?
Not even extremes. They're just these random things that someone will always say.
Yeah.
Someone will always pick out something like this and was like, you know, this one time this happened, and isn't that terrible? A guy said this at work, and then this happened, and so he was fired the next day. Why? Because he just said this. It's mm-hmm. one thing. That was it.
Yeah.
And he was just fired the next day. And is that fair? And it's like, nah, I guess not. Taken out of... That with just those things you've just said, then that is not fair. But then you're going to go, okay, so why was he fired?
So the company was waiting for an excuse to fire these guys.
Could be.
It's like, ah, we've got it, the dongle scandal.
It's possible. I mean, we're also, you know, there's the job market, for fuck's sake. I mean, when you go and you interview for a job, you know, they try to find all the things that are wrong with you to the point where they even ask, you know, what's your weaknesses? What's your biggest flaws? All these bullshit questions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you do your job, and there's certain things you can do on your job and certain things you can't do on your job. And now we're living in a new era where you take pictures of yourself doing everything, and, you know, and bad, you can maybe make some bad judgment and put some shit online. And if that's the kind of job where you can't put that kind of shit online, you know, if someone, you know, if you work in a garage door, place, if there's a video of you having sex with a garage door for fun.
I should take that down.
I'm saying you might get let go because people will not want the guy who humps garage doors to be working on their garage doors for, you know, that daycare center, possibly.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. There's extreme examples. And so I think you got to like look, you kind of pull back a little bit and go like, okay, is this because this is a new technology and we're learning how this fucking works? Which probably is it to a degree, you know? And also like, are things generally better or are things generally worse? And why is that? Why does that woman feel that she can say this? Is it because this industry that she's in she's had to deal with so much sexist bullshit from guys like this who are snickering in rooms while, you know, something is mentioned and it's just like, fuck me. You know, even this, at this conference, these fuckers are doing this. And then it goes, you know, obviously it seems like that's nothing, but I don't know what the backstory is on it, you know, and the cultural backstory on it is.
But it goes two ways too, because then she ended up as the villain.
Of course she does, and then they go after her, so she, and everyone so calls she her got, a she C got word, thrown under and the bus. Everyone's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing a thing.
So what you're saying is people aren't sure if Twitter is a social network platform or a club that you hit people with. They're not. They haven't quite figured out. They're like monkeys. They've grabbed the bone, and they're like, is it for using as a hammer, or is it for hitting you on the skull?
And I'm not quite certain yet. The answer is always both. It's like time. It's both things at the same goddamn thing. I mean, again, we don't want to talk about Trump fucking again, but he's like, there's a guy who's like in a position of power, who's like so public, but he's doing exactly what, you know, the shitheads on Twitter do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a bit threatening. He's just insulting. He's provoking. He's the kid who wants attention, good or bad, and just wants retweets. And that's what these people who like then come on and like, you know, for the people that come and gang up on the woman who makes the joke want to you know, go after it because they want to be righteous.
Yeah.
So there you go. But then they also like that sense of community. Now everyone's on my side and everyone's upvoting what I said. Mm-hmm. Everyone's saying what I said was good. Backpat, backpat, backpat. And then one person comes on and says something negative. You got to go after that person. It's a bit of a thrill, you know, and we're not used to it. And I'm sure like with everything else, it'll become boring over time and we just won't fucking do it. I think YouTube comment sections are going to become, you know, within like 5 years, just this, your mom's writing something on there now because she doesn't like that. You know, it'll be just, bleh.
No one cares.
Yeah. We'll move on.
I think we do live in a, I guess it's like a feedback loop in that the most effective way they found to make us slow down when we're driving is to put up, they have these signs now that tell you the speed you're driving at, and then they post the speed you should be driving at.
Mm.
So I'll always drive by, and I'm always driving faster, and I'm like, oh, that's good to know what speed I'm going. My speedometer works, everyone, because I'm going the speed. Other people, I guess, when they see it, they slow right down, which is true. If you're following people, they'll see it the way like, oh, it says I'm going too fast, so they'll slow down to the posted speed limit. And some of them will even like flash and give you a smiley face. So they're giving you this, you know, so it's a feedback loop. So you're seeing the information and then you're being rewarded for obeying the information. And I feel like that's what Twitter and Facebook are kind of becoming. This sort of very narrow cast. So you know, everything we do, we all agree with each other and everyone gets likes and hearts and we all feel really good.
Yeah.
And we don't want anyone putting not hearts or whatever they are.
Yeah. And you end up like getting in your own camps. And if anyone is from another camp, they're the enemy. And that's, you know, the us versus them.
The 110% culture that we live in, yeah.
I got into a thing, you know, maybe we'll talk about this later on, where my cat, we had to put her to sleep last week, like a week to the day. And the same day that this happened, my wife volunteers at an aquarium here. And one of the porpoises died.
Oh, okay.
And it was a really sweet porpoise, right?
Yeah.
And she was also working on a story about it. She was drawing a kid's book that really should have come out a couple of years ago. But it was a really sweet animal. It was one that you always like to go and visit, and it's adorable. And the fun part was always because it was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally its penis would come out and shock people and they would scream. That was also a good time, you know, when that happened.
Yeah.
And his name was Jack and he was really, really cool. So he passes away. They're still doing, I think, the, you know, necropsy on it. It's not an autopsy, but it's something else where you're trying to determine what happened. And the usuals come out and are saying this animal should not have been in captivity. Shame on them for capturing. Should always release these animals. All this stuff.
Although it would have died if it was in the ocean.
Well, this is the thing. It's like it was rescued. It was injured. When it was like less than a year old.
Okay.
And it would have, of course, died painfully in the ocean. And for the most part, okay. Here's the thing. When there's a couple of different arguments people always come up with. One is like we should leave nature alone. Let nature. Da-da. But almost all these animals, and I don't want to be like a propaganda fucking machine, but the aquarium rescues about 150. Marine mammals a year, mostly seals, but there are, you know, porpoises, sometimes dolphins, what have you, and they've got
otters?
A release rate of about 90%, which is fucking amazing. And when people say, and the rest, you know, some die because, you know, they're too far gone, and others can't survive outside of captivity, and so, you know, the life of captivity. Now, what people say is, why don't you just let them die in nature, because let nature take its course, mind your own business, but almost always the case is, they're there because of pollution or climate change or fishing boat, or someone just shoots them in the fucking face.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why they're rescued, is because mankind's done this. So the least we can do is try to help out. And 90% of the time, they can't. So with this animal, yeah, we got, everyone was just, not everyone, but a big chunk of people were, release it, shame on you, you know, you're heartless. And it was just like, and it doesn't matter what you tell these people because they're in this camp. If you're saying anything, you know, that's on that maybe this was the best thing for this animal, you're a stooge, you're working for the company, you're sure. This, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you just provide them like with a hard fact that can't be denied. It just doesn't matter. And it just feels, it's just so frustrating.
Sure.
This thing that the way things, especially online, go is there, you can never have that in between,
yes.
You know, with certain people. But what I've learned over time is that it's not the people posting that you're convincing. It's people reading the posts
yeah.
that don't post
mm-hmm.
that are on the fence,
yeah.
the fence post, who, you know, see the information that you're giving. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe let's look that up. And it's like, okay, you're right about that. That was kind of bullshit and what have you. And yeah, it just, poor little guy. he was a sweetie.
You'll get more support for a negative than you'll get for a positive.
Well, there was an article that was up, and this one steamed me, because there's a movie that, thank goodness, didn't do very well, called Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. And one of the, and their cover, their poster picture is of a whale that's covered. Whatever. And it's actually a whale that died of old age.
Okay.
It actually had a healthy, full life,
sure.
but it looks shocking because it's under a tarp.
Yeah.
So it's like, shame on, and it's in a small tank. You're like, shame on that small tank. That's the medical tank.
Yeah.
That's where it should be, because it was sick near the end of life. So there's nothing shocking about this, unless you just look at it and go, shocking. But if you learn about it, not shocking at all. In fact,
yeah.
kind of positive. It ugh. And so there was an article that was from this group called One Green Planet, and it was going, this picture of belugas in this rusty tank shows what's wrong with captivity.
Yeah.
And they write about how shameful this is, seeing this picture of these belugas in this rusty tank. Well, that's the medical tank, because, you know, clearly you can see that. And I'm like, all right. And it's not rust, it's algae, because it's cement, and there's no way that cement can rust. So I wrote to these folks, and they went, oh, you're right. That's completely wrong. But they wouldn't take the article down. And then these other local groups, including this documentary,
yeah.
put this up, you know, showing, see? I'm like, well, you guys, okay, they, because they were from, like, the States, might make this mistake.
Yeah.
But you went to the aquarium, shot a fucking documentary there, have this tank in your poster. You know this isn't true, but it doesn't matter, because it's just a shocking thing that looks shocking. So we're going to present it, and we're going to keep it up, even though it's a fucking lie, because it's on our side and it promotes our point of view. So here you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're not going to be convinced, and they're not going to take it down. But hopefully when I show that it's clearly not, and concrete doesn't rust, you know, some people go, oh, this is bullshit, so maybe the rest of it's bullshit. And yeah, but
yeah.
Damn, that was frustrating.
That was the usual thing. I mean, when they voted to get rid of the zoo at the park, after they did that, people would go to the park and they're like, well, where's the zoo? And they'd say, well, they got rid of it because you voted to get rid of it. And, well, I didn't vote to get rid of it. Well, you didn't vote, because, you know, it's easier to promote a negative than it is a positive, because most people who'd like the zoo, let's
yeah.
say, or who remember the zoo, they're not going to go vote against or for a zoo. But it's the people who hate it, they're the ones who are going to get all the attention and bring all the people there to vote against it.
And these are people who have good hearts, you know. It's like, when I first saw these things, there's a list called Van Aquafax, and it's all these things about the aquarium. And when I first saw that, I was like, these fuckers. And my wife as well, she was like, these fuckers. And then our niece and nephew wanted to go to the aquarium, and we're like, okay. So we go down there, and within like a few minutes, we're like, well, that's not true, and neither is this, and neither is that. And it was clearly none of it was true.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. It's like, you're angry at them wild capturing animals. Well, they haven't done wild capture, you know, in like almost 2 decades.
Okay.
You know, there's a ban on that.
Okay.
You know, whenever I see like the protesters, there's always people holding signs. They're basically free the orcas. It's like, there's no orcas.
Yeah.
You know, well, don't make the dolphins jump through hoops.
I miss them. Where are the orcas?
Yeah. Don't make the dolphins jump through hoops. They don't. You know, don't make them do these tricks. They don't do circus tricks. There's
yeah.
no circus tricks here. Almost all of the complaints that people have and the things they're yelling through microphones are just blatantly not fucking true. But, you know, when the news covers them, they just want to present, you know, the shock. And so they show this and, like, you know, there's controversy, but yeah. They never, like, look into what the controversy is and if it's true or not, whereas it would be very easy to fucking do. And what bugs me is these are good-hearted people who I think would do the right thing if they had the right information, but because you're coming at them with contrary information, they will never listen to you because, you're a stooge, you know? And yeah. So... Ugh. Ah, and the who suffers in this are the animals who, you know, if the aquarium ever gets shut down, then they're fucked. You know, they want them released into these sea pens that don't exist. You know, it's like, just put them in the sea. Well, they'll die. Okay, how about sea pens, which are enclosures? You know, then they won't be in captivity. That's still captivity. They will have to be looked after constantly. Like, yeah, but these exist. They don't exist. And why they don't exist is because you need to take care of these guys. And so they need to be near a shoreline. And we've polluted the water so much that there's no major urban center with a shoreline that's clean enough that would have a population that's big enough to take care of this thing. So you can't fucking do it. It's a boo, you're a stooge.
You're as mad about this as I was mad about Footloose.
That's true. Absolutely.
But I think mine was...
It's very similar.
Mine was more justified.
Sure, okay.
In a way. I think we should have a counter-protest at the aquarium. Just hold signs and, we're really boring. We're really boring. So people know that it's just plain. Everything's plain there now.
Yeah.
The whales that swim around.
There used to be
seals swim around.
There used to be someone who had a protest sign, and I think it said, "Things are fine. Carry on."
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, and they would go to, like, in front of government and just walk around. Things are fine. Carry on. There was another one. Keep up the good work.
Nice.
Yep.
I'm sure that person was the least paid attention to, though, just because that's not what people want.
I think people did pay attention because they were like, what's this about?
Yeah,
what's going on?
I guess it's a little unusual.
Yeah.
It's a little unusual.
Anyway, if you're online, just assume every so often maybe you're wrong. I try to do that when I'm reading something.
Right?
I'm like, oh, yeah, I might be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whenever I like listening to that Malcolm Gladwell revisionist history podcast, because the whole idea behind that is maybe this thing that we all consider is right is wrong.
And is that what the idea is behind it?
Generally, yeah.
Okay.
So, a portion of history, something like, I'm going to be getting this wrong, but it was like the Toyota accelerator situation.
Yes, I remember that when that happened.
Yeah, and it's
turns
it's
out it's bogus. Yeah,
bogus. Yeah, that's right. But everyone still feels, the majority of people still remember it as a certain thing.
And as Toyota was, yeah, negligent.
And the most recent one he did, which was interesting, but I thought was a little bullshitty, was about satire. And it was talking about how satire is almost always interpreted by both sides as being for them.
Mm.
So if you do an anti-bigotry, Archie Bunker, for example, when he was on All in the Family, liberals thought this is great skewering of conservatives, and conservatives thought that guy's speaking some truth. So they both would laugh at the show, both consider the person to be on side, and you know, go with it. And
I could see that. To me, if you're going to do effective satire, it has to be really eviscerating. It can't be accommodating, because then you can get co-opted. You know, very easily get co-opted.
Well, they talk
about
Peter Cook doing, I forget the satirical show he was doing in the 60s.
But that was The Week That Was, or was it Beyond the Fringe?
No, it wasn't either of those, because I would have remembered the names of both of those. But, you know, talking about how, you know, they can only hope to be successful as the satire that brought down Hitler.
Very good. Yeah. That's true. I mean, that was during the so-called satire boom.
So good.
Of early 60s.
Satire.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah, boy, really.
But once again, it was very palatable satire. I think a very unpalatable satire would be something like Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, which was a very carefully, scientifically argued argument for eating Irish babies as a way to end famine. And he presented it in a very particular way that by the time you get to the end of it is shocking. And it's hard to co-opt something that is so so evil and so nasty, which is what he wanted, you know. And the same with Gulliver's Travels. Most of us only know the first two sections of Gulliver's Travels. We really don't know about the Wynnums and stuff like that, and Laputa, which is where the satire gets really down and dirty, you know, and especially the Wynnums, where, you know, it's just a complete denial of ourselves as being, have any sort of worth as humans, right? And Gulliver just becomes this crazy person who can no longer love himself or mankind. And so we leave that stuff off now, right?
Yep.
So in a way, we can't co-opt it, but we can excise it. We can talk about Brobdingnag and we can talk about Lilliput, but we can't we don't want to talk about Laputa or the Wynnum.
Well, they also bring up, I feel like I'm just plugging another podcast, and why not? But they also talk about the Colbert Report, where he played a conservative.
Yeah.
And so, he would interview.
I'm familiar with that show.
Very good. He would interview the guests.
Yeah.
And Malcolm Gladwell was talking about being a guest on the show and feeling uncomfortable, and every time feeling like he doesn't want to ever do it again.
Yeah.
And then he would end up doing it again. But how liberals thought, oh, this is great. Great skewing.
Yeah.
And conservatives would watch the same thing and go like, yeah, he's really sticking it to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, well, how could that be possible? But people see the thing that they see.
They try
to enforce their own, beliefs. And,
mm-hmm.
So is the point of satire then to shake the beliefs? Like, you already have the people who are convinced of some. If you're like pro-cheese,
yes.
you don't have to make this something that people who are pro-cheese will go, this is for me. Because fuck it, you're already pro-cheese.
Yeah.
But the people who are anti-cheese, you've got to, do you just have to direct it towards them? Is that your only real audience for this? Because you want the satire to change something? Or do you want to be a delightful thing for the pro-cheese people to enjoy and go and get their beliefs reinforced and get their back patted? Or do you want to just be like a nice skewering thing where you're going to like shame the people who are anti-cheese?
But does any of it work? I mean, I know there's part of the show is Harry Enright's loads of dough or loads of cash?
Loads of money.
Which was a parody of the kind of grasping conservative, the sort of...
Money-grubbing, brash, gauche. Thatcher era.
That didn't work because it's too friendly.
Right.
Your satire can't make friends. Your satire has to offend everyone, Like something like meeting colored people at parties. Is that, the Lenny Bruce. But I think if people heard it now, they'd be offended by it, because the person in it, is in every way offensive. The idea
but
of it...
But shouldn't satire, for the most part, go out of... Be almost like unpalatable... With it, like good satire should then be unpalatable very shortly after, because hopefully that problem has been dealt with. And if it hasn't been, then your satire didn't help the situation anyway.
Well, I think that would be it, wouldn't it? Because when we listen to, if we listen to Lenny Bruce now, this kind of fits something. Someone's writing an article about
is
Lenny Bruce still funny?
Yeah.
And it, did he write that?
No,
or?
But I think he linked to it. And parts of his book are quoted in it.
Okay. And the writers. The sort of the theme of it was, that at the time, dead on, nowadays, less. I mean, but I still think there's things that travel, what he did. But yes, so much of the satire or the commentary, has now been sort of erased by time because the things he's talking about, are more acceptable to our culture. So it doesn't really
I forget what the clip is, but someone always puts this one clip of like George Carlin on. And it's like George Carlin, at his very best. And it's 3 minutes of him talking about how the government works.
Okay.
And he's in front of a huge audience and doesn't get one laugh.
Mm.
Like even at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing. And it's like, this is him at his best. And it's like, nope, it's not. It's not at his best as a comedian. If you're not getting one laugh.
Truthful?
It's just like, it's good. It's good preaching, but you're probably preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
And you're not winning over anyone who doesn't already buy this.
Yeah.
And and when they were talking on the show, it was about like how laughter is kind of a relief, and it releases things in you, and you feel good.
Sure.
So you might not be as angry by the end because you've laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's taken the heat off a little bit. It's let the steam out, so you're not as mad.
Yeah.
Because you're laughing through the whole thing, and you don't want to go like grab your pitchfork and flaming torch at the end of it, and storm the House of Parliament.
So they probably like it. They recognize it as a release.
Mm-hmm. But what Malcolm Gladwell was coming down hard on was Saturday Night Live, saying when Sarah Palin was on, when Tina Fey was doing Sarah Palin, she did kind of a good attack on her, but then over time they just made her too likable and light, and then actually had Sarah Palin on, and it's
co-opted.
It co-opted, she'd go on Letterman and talk about how she did the voice instead of like how troublesome this person is and how this probably led to, Trump, now. And it's like, I get that, but I don't think that's what Saturday Night Live is. Saturday Night Live isn't, has been on the air for like 40 years.
Yeah.
It isn't where you go for the biting fucking satire.
It's not a satirical show.
No, it does comedy on politics of the time,
yeah.
But it's not a place that can be as satirical as a Swift.
Sure.
Because it wouldn't last for 40 years.
No, that's right. I mean, Chevy Chase's Gerald Ford, let's go way back to the, into the past. You know, his bit was that because one time Gerald Ford walking down the stairs from a plane fell and fell down a couple of steps. After that, the gag became him just falling down all the time.
Yeah, it's clumsy. And a little bit dumb.
And that's it. But, you know, it's more lovable than scathing.
And the same thing with Will Ferrell and George Bush. Made him a very lovable, you know, doofus.
Yeah.
You know, one of the darker ones that I did like was where it was I think it was Dana Carvey as like George Bush Senior.
Yeah.
And it was him with his son, and they were out hunting, and it was one of these where like he realized that his son was just too far gone and sent him out into the bush and was aiming his gun at him, and it was going to be a mice and men situation where he's like, no, there's lots of ducks out there, just go get the ducks, you'll be with the ducks. And he was just, and he ended up couldn't do it, but it's like, oh, that's, yeah, maybe. Huh. This is pretty fucking dark.
Yeah,
this is darker than usual. But you know, then of course the rubber band snaps back, and they try to make fun of the other side as well. And
yeah, we want to be balanced. We want to, but they, you know, yeah, as
they
want to continue. Wouldn't have been on the
they
air.
Want to keep doing the show. Yeah. They want a big audience.
That's right,
and that's what they are. So to be mad at them for not being the satire, you don't find your satire on NBC.
No,
you know, Jack, that's not where it's at.
You look for your commentary from people who no one's paying attention to at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones you're going to look back on and go, oh, yeah, this person, you know, let's take Lenny Bruce, for instance. This person really understood how the entertainment industry was infecting politics and the rest of our culture. You know, and his thing was always, you know, turning, you know, like having Adolf Hitler come to see his agents and his agents grooming him for the entertainment, the world of entertainment, you know, the political world, you know, so, you know, or Religions Incorporated or whatever one that he did, you know, where he's treating, you know, cultural things as part of this even bigger sphere of entertainment, you know, which at the time was pretty revolutionary. Now we're very used to that idea that everything is about, you know, entertainment and blah, 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 and that, you know, how much hucksterism there is in politics or whatever. You know, so those sort of things, when we hear Lenny Bruce say, then we shrug and we go, okay, yeah, we got it.
I mean, I like something like you know, Jon Stewart, I think, did a nice job. And one of the most, you know, words are hard for me right now, folks. Let me just tell you that much. Jon Stewart was trying to get the first responders compensated, their health benefits.
Yeah.
And Congress was denying this. And so he had them, four of them on the show, and we're talking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it looked like something was going to happen. And then years later, nothing had gone on. So he had them back on the show, and there's only two left.
Hmm.
And he just goes over to the table, and the two seats are empty, and just starts talking about it, you know, almost without bringing this up. And then it gets referred to. And it was just this, whoa,
yeah,
okay, that's a pretty good way of doing it. It's
that's
like, it gets a dark, you know.
But that's advocacy, which I think is different than satire, once again. You know what I mean?
So yeah, that's a good point. Okay, well, here's where I think there was some good satire.
Not to knock advocacy.
Yeah.
To knock what he did, which I think is very courageous and brave for someone to stand up for other people.
You could wrap it as satire, because the whole thing is a fake newscast. You know, and so, and so within the bounds of that, because we've forgotten that, because it's so common to do a fake newscast, it could wrap. But I think when Colbert ran for president and used the Citizen United thing to show how super PACs work.
Yeah.
I thought that was good.
Okay.
Because it showed how do they get this money and does it work?
They don't even have
them
anymore. That's how effective it was.
It was very it was very educational as to like who. Well, but that was the thing. I'll tell you where I think it was effective, because he showed like, you know, all these people can just donate. You can't, you know, talk to them, right? So, okay, that's the safety, is you can't talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So then he showed ways that you could talk to them. And it's like, and this is how people talk to them.
Yeah.
And so if you think they're distant, they're not fucking distant. And this is how money influences politics. Mm-hmm. Now you fucking know. We're doing a satire of how politics is run. So when you had Bernie Sanders, you know, saying how he was gathering money together, you know, the small donations, no super PACs, Hillary, yes, super PACs, Donald Trump, no super PACs, people knew what the fuck super PACs were.
Yeah.
And so knew how money works into politics. So when Bernie Sanders is anti, you know, Citizens United, people have been educated by this comedy bit that he got a lot of laughs doing. So, you know, maybe that is a good example of satire working and maybe making a little bit of a change, because I don't think someone like a Bernie Sanders could have gone as far as he did without people knowing what the fuck he's talking about. Because if he had to educate them at the same time, you know, you wouldn't be able to swing it.
That's possible.
Why don't you internet shame him now? Internet Bernie Shane Sanders. Bernie Sanders. Yeah,
yeah, go for it. Time. It's time for the turnaround. I feel like I just rubbed blood on my face.
Have you got blood on your face? Are you okay?
I'm bleeding in my...
Your knuckles bleeding?
Yeah. Did I write blood on my face?
I do not see blood on your face.
Okay.
I'm now concerned. What part of your body is bleeding?
Oh, just I got a cut today.
All right. So. I'm gonna go look for a bandage.
Oh no, it's okay. It's okay. I don't need a bandage for it because it's on a joint. It won't work.
All right, it's on the joint.
It won't work. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine. It just split open. It's okay, everyone. I'm working here today. It's weird. It's a deep cut. It's a deep paper cut kind of thing that I got from some metal at work. And I was wearing my gloves, so I'm glad I was wearing gloves. Otherwise, it would be a terribly deep gash.
I mean, known as Dave Deep Cut Dedrick. But it's normally for your musical
references. Musical references, and yeah, that's what I'm usually known for, my deep cuts. You're right. All right, let's move on from satire, because I'm bored of it. And let's talk about something that just happened to you last week. And I think you want to talk about Augie.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. All right. Yeah, on our last show. Well, first of all, let me give a thanks out here to I wrote my cat passed away. Yeah. We had to put her to sleep. She had she had a case of she was an old cat.
Okay,
that's what she had. She had chronic kidney disease. Is what she had. But she was, you know, she lived a year longer than her breed normally lives, what have you. And so let me just say, first of all,
so your guys' love kept her going.
Is your goal to make me cry? Because if so, I'm going to cry on your wound, and it's going to sting. Salty tears on a wound are going to sting you.
Just telling the truth.
Because I have been Johnny mood swings all week. There's a bunch of unpacking to do here. But the first bag I want to unpack is I told kind of the story of August on our Facebook page.
Yes.
And last week I also asked if people would send in pictures of their animals.
Sure.
And when I said that before, we were still doing treatment of her and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of you put up pictures there, and it just meant the world. Just seeing all your little animals and all the little faces and getting all their stories, and that just made the world. Thanks so much for everyone who did that. That kindness. See, you're getting me. That kindness really, really got to me. So, yeah, we from the time that we talked, we do these shows every 2 weeks, right?
That's right.
So two Thursdays ago was when I was talking about the treatments we were giving her.
Mm-hmm.
And then last week was when she passed away on Thursday. Okay. And the nice thing was, you know, it was getting kind of near. Two nights before, we had a thing where my wife thought maybe it was time to put her to sleep. So we got her, we gathered her, we put her on the bed, and she kind of sprung kind of back to life a little bit.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so she was purring and she seemed to be happy. And we went, okay, well, keep this going. We don't know what the situation will be, but we're going to take her to the vet on Friday. And this She was being satirical. That's right. And so we're like, okay, we'll do that. We'll keep giving her treatments. Maybe what'll happen is we'll end up, instead of doing the treatments every 2 days, which is like giving her basically saline, hydrating, we'll do it every day and we'll see what happens. And then the next day, she was really hiding a lot.
Oh, okay.
She was hiding. She was finding a lot of hiding spots.
Yeah.
And so it was a little scary thinking that maybe she'd find a hiding spot that we wouldn't find her because she's a very, very good hider. And then on Thursday in the afternoon, I couldn't find her for the life of me. Looked everywhere. Finally found her in this one little corner and just went, okay, let's... I picked her up, took her upstairs, and put her on the bed, and was petting her. And again, she sprung to life a little bit more.
Okay.
My wife came in, and it was a beautiful afternoon. And Charlie, our other cat, jumped on the bed. They just had a lovely afternoon. And my sister-in-law happened to come by, and we were thinking that maybe it was time for her, but we still weren't sure. And my sister-in-law was just checking her out too. And it's like, well, she's purring. She's interacting with Charlie. I went and I got her some food. She was eating the food. It was like, okay. Well, again, we'll see how this goes. And through the afternoon, she was like lying on the bed with Charlie in the sun. It was beautiful. That night was the meteor shower. My wife and I go in the backyard watching the meteorites fall. It was actually interesting because we had our neighbors come by who live upstairs. And they were, what's up with this? The meteorites. And I'm like, oh, we explained the meteorites thing. And she's like, oh, you know what? I'd love to be shot into space when I die. I'm like, what? Yeah. But like just frozen so that I could wake up and then I could tell people about the Beatles. I'm like, what? I was like, well, you know, so I could just explain to aliens about the Beatles. And I said, well, I do a podcast, which I guess, you know, technically gets shot into space. We've covered the Beatles. They're good. Don't worry about it. So whatever you want to do when you die, you're fine.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's good. And so, you know, they go with the thing. So we're watching the meteor. And because they're falling stars, I make a wish. And the wish I make is that we do the right thing by her. And so we go inside, and I can't see her again. And then I realize she's behind the bed, and she's behind our bed, and she's lying flat on the floor. There's a little bit of poop that's okay. there next to her, and a yeah. little bit of vomit in her mouth, and she's lying on her side.
Yeah.
And it looks like she's had a bit of a seizure.
Mm.
So we pick her up and wrap her in this, you know, towel that we've got, and pet her, and just realize it's time. We call the vet, and luckily, and it's very late at night.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, 2 a.m. And it turns out they can do an emergency thing where the vet comes to the you know, the clinic, and it's a vet that she knows, and they know August. And so we wrap her up. We get her in a cab. We take her there after just, you know, getting all the goodbyes, brought Charlie up to say goodbye. Take her there. It was really beautiful. You know, it was like, we'd been there so much that they knew her, and it felt sincere that, you know, that we'd been through this journey. And we got her. It was also really nice because this one room that we're in, her other cat had been sick in the past. And it was actually a very weird situation where we took our cat in, and that cat turned out to be okay. But when we had taken our cat in, then my wife had lost her wedding ring, and it had come off while we were there. We didn't realize this, and so she thought she lost it, and it was her. And then when we went back, it was actually Christmas Day, I believe. And then we picked up our cat. Our cat was fine, and two, she found her wedding ring, and it was really nice. And then just coincidentally, there was a cat that was near where our cat was. There was this black cat. It was a really beautiful cat. We asked about this cat, and they said, oh, this cat's looking for a home and had a twisted stomach. The owners, you know, couldn't take care of it, and it's this, that, and the other. And my sister Dale had said a little earlier that day that she was looking for a cat that was like a black cat. And I was like, oh, okay. So we told her about it. And the next day we all went in together, and she adopted that cat. And she wasn't sure about what she was going to adopt the cat, but we were in this little room, and the cat was there, and the cat was looking nervous. And then we were all standing around, and then the cat walked up to my sister and just put both paws on her chest. And just looked
wow.
up at her.
Wow.
And it was just like, yes, this is a thing. And so they've been very happy together since.
Yeah.
That was the room that they were putting my cat to sleep.
Okay.
So we had a beautiful memory of that. And I've had another cat of mine that we had to put to sleep, and it wasn't the most pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to go to a 24-hour clinic, and it was kind of cold, and it was kind of impersonal.
Yeah.
But this was very different. They gave us a lot of really nice time. They turned the lights down.
Mm-hmm.
We said everything we had to say. And my wife had gotten this cat when her apartment building burned. There was a big fire, and so she lost her home. And in the basement were all these feral cats, and this August was one of them. And so my mother-in-law read about these cats and went, you know what, my Pia needs a cat, and the cat needs a person, and you're both going to get through this together.
Hmm.
And so Pia was like, I don't know about this. And so she ended up getting the cat, and the cat stayed like 6 months under the bed. It was feral. It was nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
We finally got Charlie. She got Charlie, the other cat, and the cat taught her that cats were okay. Taught her to talk. She always talked with a weird accent because she learned to meow late in life.
Yeah.
But when we're there, we're like, your job was to get her through this, and you both did. And, you know, we're going to miss her a lot, but she did it. She did, you know, all the good things. It was beautiful and really sad. And, you know, we said her goodbyes, and they did the one injection, which is, you know, the one that puts her to sleep.
Sure.
The next one is like an overdose of a pain drug.
Mm-hmm.
So no pain. The next one's just one that just flushes the tube and flushes it through. And so she went. And the weird thing was, we could still hear her purring.
Hmm.
Even though she was gone.
Wow.
And then we said our goodbyes, and I was kind of holding it together. I was crying a lot, but I was holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
Where I kind of lost it a bit was I had to call for a cab, and you know, gave the instructions of the animal hospital. And they're like, oh, that's Animal Hospital, huh? Yeah, okay, any pets? And I had to go, no. Fuck.
That's when it hit you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we went back home, and we just sat out on the stoop for a while. And it was all these small, beautiful things that happened in the middle of all the sadness.
Yeah.
And one of them being that the meteor shower was still going.
Okay.
Then we saw a big meteor, and we went like, Augie. And the other thing we realized was this happens once a year, so we'll always have this memorial tour every year, which is nice. And so that was it. And then we went back inside and kind of started taking down her things that were just specifically hers. And I think the thing that I found the hardest, I've been a real mood swing guy for the last week. I think the thing that I found the hardest is I had to do so much care for her near the end.
Yeah.
And you miss the caring. Mm-hmm. You miss the grinding the pills. You miss setting up the IV. It sounds weird that that's what you'd miss.
Yeah.
But you became so in tune with, is she okay? What's going on? How is she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's better now. The thing I've done has made her better. That good feeling of like you've mm-hmm. helped a little bit.
It's an intimate time together.
It is. And your sense, it's like what they say about people and their cats is only you really know what your cat's saying when it's meowing and what have you. You get into a thing where, because every relationship is unique. And so there's little things that a cat does that you go like, I know what this is. This means you want in. This means you want this. This means you don't want this. And you become even more like that when they're sick. And it's tough turning that off, you know? So I kind of miss that, the intimacy. And
mm-hmm.
yeah. And so my other cat's getting a lot of attention right now. So that's there. And now here's the, and there's an orange cat that's across the street that's been getting a lot of attention too, because it comes over at night and hangs out.
Okay.
And it used to have kind of a thing with August where it would go to the window and they would hiss each other, but I think they were flirting as well. So last night, this is just a quick story about this. So last night we go out and we go like, why don't we turn out the lights while we sit on the steps? It'd be nice. Well, the orange cat comes over and we just see its little shadow at the bottom of the stairs. We're like, hey, how you doing? And we're both kind of, again, talking about August and stuff. And as it comes closer, we realize it's a raccoon. And we have to do a blah, 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 and shoo it away. And there it goes. And so, yeah, there. So we almost got rabies because of the whole thing. But yeah, I've been, it's been every emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to apologize to my wife for being a minefield the last little while. You know, it's just little things just set you off, and yeah, just this little thing of love that you're gonna miss.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So that's my story. And again, thank you everybody for you know, pet pictures, and we will take more. Always take more. And thank you to the kindness of so many people out there who've like helped us. You know, if you're listening to through all this, so thanks.
I was going to post a picture of Risa Bisa, meow, 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 but
yay.
For whatever reason, as you know, when we have the Sneaky Dragon page.
Yeah.
And so when we want to post on it, we have to post as Sneaky Dragon. We can't opt
right.
to post as ourselves, as you can on Facebook,
right.
on your computer. It won't allow me to post a picture. I don't know why, as a comment.
Oh, that's strange.
Yeah, I was odd, so I wanted to post one. I'll try and figure
it out. And put it on the Facebook page as well.
That's what I'm talking about, on the Facebook page.
Oh, on the Facebook. It won't let you put a Facebook.
Yeah, it wouldn't. From weird. As a, I've ever, like, unless I'm doing like a post, but just as a comment, it didn't give me an option. So
you could comment as Dave really Dedrick. You can do that
on my computer, but not on my phone, which is where the picture was.
Oh, I understand.
Because I guess I can do the rigmarole of getting the picture onto my computer. And,
right.
Because yeah, okay. I know I felt bad last week actually when I was listening to the show the other day, and I was like listening to me talking about the cat, and I was like, oh, everything I'm saying is so not true.
What's that?
This is my stupid curmudgeonly character I've put on at home, which is, oh, the pets, rah, 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 you know. I play like the dad role with our pets, which is like my daughter was saying the other day. She's like, Dad, I know that you love Risa. And I said, well, how do you know that? Because whenever you look at her, you smile. I said, well, that's true. But not true that I love her. Rub, rub, rub. You know, it's just, you can't, you know, like, I can't give up that. But I do. I love all my pets. So it's,
of course you do.
And yeah, we went through a very similar thing with our other dog, Misty.
Yeah.
You know, to the vets. And then in a nice room to say goodbye. And that's nice that they give you like an intimate space to sit together. You know, and just, you know, she was laying on the floor and we could put her head in her in our laps and pet her and say goodbye. And that was very nice, you know. Yeah. I like that. I like it better than like when my dog that I had as from 6 years old to 20, when he died.
What was your dog's name again?
Scamp.
Scamp. Yeah, I remember Scamp.
Is
there a sexy picture of you holding Scamp online?
No, that is actually his replacement, I guess. Like, my mom bought a puppy a little while after, okay. And I was holding out. That's Bo. And so, yes, I don't know if it's sexy. Is he, does he look sexy to you in that picture?
I'm not talking about the dog.
Because he's wearing a bikini, right?
I'm talking about your dog, shirtless long hair. It's the 90s.
A doggini. Yeah. But when Scamp died, for one thing, he'd been in my life for 14 years, like from almost before I knew anything to, you know, to when I was 20, when I still didn't know anything. And then he died on Boxing Day night, and he went outside, and we had this big, how do I describe it? A big emotional ruckus that night, not related to our family, but a friend of my brother's, a girlfriend of my brother's, and they had a big fight. And so I basically went to bed with her crying. And I woke up in the morning to hear crying still, and I thought, that's very strange. And it was my mom crying because Scamp had died. But he had gone outside when we were having this big ruckus, and he just went outside and died. Like, he wanted to go, like most animals do, to go to a corner and leave us. So we couldn't say goodbye to him. You know, we didn't have that opportunity. And then my dad, I think he did it because he thought we'd be very disturbed by seeing him. He just took him away to the vets to have the, you know, the body disposed of. And so we never didn't get to say goodbye to him even then, you know, so it just felt like such a, you know, and of course, because he was just a huge part of my life, even though he liked to bite the mail. So, you know, I was either loving him and petting him and thinking he's the greatest thing, or I was so mad at him because he ate my World magazine as it came into the house and be scared, you stupid dog, you know, that kind of thing. But that you do that because you love them too, right?
Yep.
So it's, yeah. Yeah, pets are the greatest and the most hardest thing to have in our lives. I guess.
Yeah, here's my.
I guess anything you love in your life is the greatest and the hardest thing to have in your life.
It's a bit of a different relationship. Like, it's a different relationship too when you have like your kid animal.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, your parents also take care of it, and it's a
bit of
a difference. Like my first, you know, pet was my dog Inca, and my memory of her passing was it did kind of go on a little too long, where like she would be falling down the stairs or she'd run out, and we'd find her with like her head in a bag or something, you know, really
sending all these messages.
Well, she was going through garbage, you know, in the neighbors, and it was just like she was kind of a mess by the end. And it was really a shame. And so like, but my memory of her,
I thought she was performing as the unknown comic.
Yeah, so. That would also be very, very sad. Yeah. What do you call a bunch of cows masturbating in a field? Beef stroking off. That's great stuff, Mr. McLaughlin. Is it McLaughlin? Maury McLaughlin?
Langdon?
Maury McLaughlin. Clang with the Maury.
Murray Langdon.
Murray Langdon.
I think that's what it was.
Make me laugh. Seriously, try to make me laugh. You. Anyway, forget Lenny Bruce. Is that funny anymore? We'll see. But I was coming back from the last day of school.
Yes.
And just glad to have graduated, because I didn't think I was going to graduate. I thought I was missing like 2 credits or something. Mm-hmm. But somehow my math was so bad I couldn't add up my credits. So
you shouldn't have graduated.
Maybe. By the way, that's never been an issue. And, you know. Anyway, so I was feeling weird. I was feeling like, well, that's that done.
Yeah.
Not really sure where things are going now. Mm-hmm. Feeling in a very weird state.
Sure.
I come home and my mom goes, we got to put the dog down. And it's just very that. And then she left because she was like in a rush getting out. She just told me that. So I was like, oh. And then I went and I was in the basement and I was sitting down in the basement and just going. And I realized I couldn't feel anything. Like I couldn't feel anything emotionally at all. Like gone.
Mm.
And I went, oh, that's interesting. And I'm like, let me just try and think of things that make me sad. And I tried to think of things that made me sad, and I felt nothing. And I'm like, think of things I'm scared of. Nope, nothing at all. Think of things I find funny. Not at all. And I realize I'm really sad about Inca dying.
Yeah.
I can't cry. I can't feel anything. Oh, this is not good. So I went upstairs. You know, I got to do something. I went and I grabbed a bunch of eggs, and I just took them to the bathtub, and I just hucked them at the tub, like as hard as I could.
Yeah.
Just smashing eggs until I started to feel something. Just because it was such a weird thing to do that it kind of woke my brain up a little bit. It felt like I'm sleepwalking and I need to fucking wake up because this is very, very dangerous. And then, I kind of came out of it, cleaned up the tub, didn't replace the eggs. And it was a bit of a mess after that.
Interesting. Yeah, with Scamp, I was a mess for a while after.
Yeah, Scamp, by the way, was a great dog.
It was a very good dog.
Yeah.
Very good dog. And
did Scamp like swimming in the pool?
No, not allowed to happen. And I went swimming in someone's pool that allowed their dog to swim in it. And I have to say that I would not recommend allowing your dog to swim in a pool that you want to swim in.
Okay.
It's kind of gross.
Anti-dog in the pool.
Yes.
Very strong.
Well, I'm more like anti not cleaning your pool. Because actually, when I think about it, when I dove into that pool.
It's probably not the dog's fault.
I dove into the pool and it tasted more like hairspray than it did like chlorine water.
Yeah.
Which tells me that they weren't looking after that pool. And I, you know, I, like I say, we had a, when I was a kid, we had a pool in the backyard. And, you know, you'd dive in and the water would be nice and crisp and cool. And you'd let it into your mouth and kind of let it go out again, you know. And I did that in that pool and I regretted that. I did. I didn't even realize a dog was allowed in it when I first jumped in. I was just like, yay. Blah.
Well, it's not a great idea to allow your dog in because the dog can't get out. It's
yeah,
a real problem.
Without scratching the lining and stuff like that.
Well, not even scratching the lining. I, like, I remember my dog, Inca, when we had a pool for 6 months and we lived in Burlington, Ontario.
Okay.
She'd like bend over to try to drink some water and then whoa, and then be dog paddling.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, you have to keep an eye on her in the backyard because, you know, old slip and fall is there.
Strange.
And like you walk out and see her in the pool dog paddling. Oh, this could have been tragic. Scoop up. Don't be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never had an issue like of that with Scamp. He was probably petrified of us splashing him and things because we were three boys in a pool.
Oh, how terrifying for a dog.
For everyone concerned. Yeah. For our neighbors, for everyone.
Yeah, there's nothing more terrifying than three boys.
They've built an echo chamber in the backyard with the three boys in it. Everyone else happy about that? Yeah. Yeah, great idea. Thanks.
So the moral of the story today is get a pet, love your pet.
Yes.
And it's going to hurt at the end, but it's all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's just a minor part, minor payback for all the love that you get.
From, absolutely.
In your
I
life.
I mean, Misty is still remembered as a fine television reporter.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
You probably
covered
quite
a lot
understand.
Of stories, covered a lot of stories, broke a lot of, broke a lot of news.
Let me explain that.
Nope.
Which is that Misty loved to chew a bone, but she would hold it with her paws in such a way that it looked like she was holding a microphone, like she was a news reporter. And then she would be talking by chewing on the rawhide bone, and I would go, Misty here, reporting from the living, you know, and that's, because it just looked like
A good bit.
It was a good bit. It didn't look like, unfortunately, this is before the days of cell phones and recording pictures and things like that. So
there was one really cool thing about August, which was she had a look on her face of, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
She really had that look of like in a farce when the vicar shows up and just walks into a room and you'd be doing like anything and she'd just walk in the room and just look at you like, the hell? And then she just shake her head a little bit, and then she'd turn around and leave. And it was like the perfect little take. I was like, oh, man, that's good.
Yes.
That is good humans are stupid look.
I can have some, take some, I guess, a little bragging rights.
Oh, bragging.
In that she would sit in my lap.
And
she would not sit in everyone's lap, I don't think. A cat that's not been around people for a good part of its life has, you know, with strangers and stuff like that, isn't really going to.
This was my brag with August, was when we got her, P and I weren't living together. When the apartment burned down, she actually moved into the building next to me.
Hmm.
So I'd like go over quite a bit, but it was too soon to be moving in together.
Yeah.
And so one day she came over like looking for August. What else is new? This would be a thing in our life. By the way, here's the thing. She is the gift who keeps on giving because like about 2 days ago, my wife lost something that was really important in the house. And I went like, let's go find it. We broke it down room by room.
Yeah.
And finally found it. And it was a really important thing. We found it and it was great. It was irreplaceable. And I went like, thanks, August, because you've made me a really good fucking hide and seeker. You know, I this is how I've looked for her. So I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. But this was like maybe the first 2 weeks that she had her and she was still under the bed for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where we thought she might not have a sense of smell until I came over with some tuna and she had a sense of smell. She came out.
Yeah.
So she's like, where is she? Where could she be? Well, she made her way up onto a counter and fell behind the fridge.
Oh.
And it was like a little, just a small enough space for her to just be in there.
But she didn't know how to meow yet.
She couldn't meow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
no.
So we didn't know. We just heard a shuffle and like look back there. It was like, oh, shit. And it's also, oh, shit, because to get her out, normally you'd, like, shuffle the fridge a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But you can't. She's right tight behind there.
Yeah.
She'd get crushed.
Sure.
So it was this one. It was me with the fridge on the floor doing a pull, like a straight pull with no back and forth.
Sure.
And it was tear your arms out fucking hard.
Yeah.
So did it, pulled it out.
You hulked it. You got the gamma radiation flow through your veins.
It's the mother lifting the car up because you know the
chassis. Yeah.
So we did the fucking street pull out really fucking hard.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, maybe she'll jump out. She's not gonna jump out. Like, oh, I gotta go in. So I go in behind the thing.
Yeah.
She's now made herself about the size of like a silly putty egg. She's in a corner that small. I pick her up. And I've got to like climb out now of this tight space behind a fridge.
Yeah.
And my wife's apartment was not big. Imagine the smallest kitchen ever and how big that space is for the space behind the fridge.
Yeah.
Sliding myself up while I am just getting shredded. My chest is just shredded to, you know, then put her on the ground and Little Miss Grateful right under the bed. And then I'm just like Johnny Chestablood. I'm wearing a red shirt now. My white shirt I was wearing at the time was much redder than this.
Dear me.
But, yeah.
But on the plus side, the fridge was never cleaner behind.
That's right. That is an excellent, excellent point.
Silver lining.
Yep.
To that incident. Worth the chest lacerations.
And this was one other quick thing was, because you spent so much time under the bed, when we were having that first time, we thought we may have to put her down, and we had her on the bed. She was purring, and she was enjoying herself. And we were remembering how she would never, Pia was worried she would never, like, want to be, you know, in here. And we went, you made it. Top of the bed, Ma. Top of the bed.
Yes.
Yep.
That is, I mean, we didn't quite go through that, but when we first got Risa, she would not leave the downstairs bathroom. She would just sit in there behind the toilet, you know, because she was in a new house.
Yeah. I like to watch you poop.
Very curious.
Yeah, she was a real Chuck Berry.
I never know if I should believe that story. I know that story, but I only read it in one source, and I've always wondered if it was true. I would go down to the bathroom and I would sit with her and pet her.
Yeah.
And you know, try to coax her into like joining the family. This is before Elle. This is only Boo and her.
Right.
When times were simpler. And yeah, she eventually came out. The part I don't like about where she is now is that Lisa, who is the world's most lenient pet owner. Yeah.
We're not doing the siren thing today. Just letting you know.
We're not?
Because we're having a very sensible discussion.
She kind of let...
It's really too bad because it's a very exciting siren.
It is a very exciting siren.
Guess what it is, everybody. Yeah, Try and guess. What did you guess? Is it a fire truck? Is it a police truck? Is it a hazmat? Is it a police car? Did you guess ambulance? Good for you.
Good for you. Take two drinks. Take
two drinks and hide in the bathroom.
Lisa has kind of let Risa become a outdoor cat, mm-hmm. which I'm not actually that fond of outdoor cats because I think cats are very destructive to the environments that they're parachuted
machines,
into.
Yeah.
And so I kind of miss the idea that, or I kind of regret that, like I can't go outside and there's grouse, you know, or killdeer or flying squirrels in the neighborhood because all those animals are easy prey for cats and they've all been eaten in the cat buffet. So I feel like...
Would you have flying squirrels in your neighborhood?
We would.
Oh, wow.
If cats weren't around. We could. We live near a forest and, you know, there's trees and the squirrels. We do have squirrels. We just don't have flying squirrels because for whatever reason
they're just like eating the wings.
Don't we all?
Big plate don't we all? Of squirrel wings.
Yeah.
And then all these squirrels walking around just like, son of a bitch.
But what I worry about is that as she gets older... And she starts to want to just disappear.
Yeah.
Then she will just disappear.
She will. Yeah.
And we will never be able to say goodbye to her. And that makes me sad that possibility exists. So hopefully, I don't want to say what I was going to say. So forget it. I was going to say hopefully she dies in the house, but that sounds terrible. Like hopefully she doesn't die.
You know what? She's got to die one of two places.
Yeah.
You know, either.
And I'd rather
either the house or the vet or outside. She's going to pass away somewhere. Yeah. Yeah,
I hope that we can say goodbye to her.
When you were saying about the, you know, the cats are murder machines, here was, first of all, we've been mouse-free for as long as I can remember,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know...
You have cats.
Cats. But here was what August would do with a mouse. And, you know, maybe this gets a little graphic, maybe it gets a little funny. I don't know. But
it's not sexual, right?
Yeah, she would... No, she was fixed. So what would happen would be we'd get up in the morning and we'd look down and there would be a mouse.
Yes.
Okay. Paper thin. Like August had taken a little Looney Tunes steamroller and just run over it.
It's not outside
cartoon
the field.
Style.
That's not impossible.
It isn't impossible until we one day saw what the process was. The process is
You take a mouse
by the tail.
Okay.
And hit it against the wall.
Once?
Maybe about 175 times. until that mouse is flattened completely wafer thin.
Oh, dear.
And then you can write a novel on the mouse if you feel
sure,
like it.
Sure.
I don't. It's just the weirdest thing. That was like her thing. One day, speaking of mouse related situations, for about 2 days, the cats would stare at the vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Just stare at the vacuum cleaner. Like,
okay.
What's this about? What's this about? What's this about? Till we went, uh-oh. So we decided to open the vacuum cleaner. Well, there's a mouse in the
vacuum cleaner.
Of course, that's right.
Yeah.
And so we ended up having to like take it down to the basement and free it, and which of course pisses off the cats because
you take
like,
it to the, into the basement or outside?
Well, into the we took it into this big parking lot that was in the basement of our building.
Oh, I
it was
see.
Near
oh,
the
okay.
Outside. Yeah, we didn't put it in our own basement.
Yeah. Let's put it somewhere where it won't bother us. Let's put it downstairs.
Yeah. And so, you know, after there was a little bit of something where Pia went, like, maybe we could have it as a pet. Well, let's just read up on these kind of, we can't have it as a pet. This thing touches you, you could die off the everything.
Yeah.
So we leave it down, and it's like a little scared mouse.
They're incredibly dirty.
Yeah, it's incredibly dirty. And it's a little scared mouse.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, well, that's it's so scared it won't move for quite a giant jumps, just enormous jumps. We're like, fuck, get out of the way, it could get
they can jump because Risa has the opposite technique, that is, she catches a mouse, brings it inside so we can kill it.
Yeah, it's trying to teach you.
Yeah. And Lisa is absolutely phobically scared of rats and mice, so she is in no way happy with the arrival of the live mouse. So, you know, glass, piece of cardboard, back outside.
Well,
good technique.
Now I'm not going to try and tell you how to run things. You know.
You have a better technique for catching
mice? I'm no cat expert.
Okay.
I've had three cats, so but
you're
I'm
no,
no
you're
cat
no
expert.
Expert. You're no expert.
But let me just tell you, this is what I think Lisa has to do. Okay, and just you pass this along to her.
Okay.
This is how to get rid of that problem once and for all.
Yeah.
Because what the cat is trying to do, like a cat is both a kitten and it's also a mother to its people.
Yeah.
So in some ways it wants you to treat it like its kitten. In some ways it wants to teach you things.
Yes.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So the problem is Lisa has never shown this cat, Risa, she knows how to kill and eat a mouse. So what she's got to do is this.
Oh, okay.
What she's got to do is
all
this.
Right.
The next time that Risa brings a mouse in,
sure,
she's just got to go down, snap its neck, and eat it in front of your cat. And then Risa will go, you can now take care of yourself as a person, slash cat.
Yeah.
My job here is done. I will go eat mice outside for the rest of time. That's all she's got to do. At least
snap
the neck, eat the mouse.
Eat it raw. Well,
of course, eat it raw.
Raw.
That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Eat it raw.
Yeah.
Let the cat see this happen, and then the cat will be fine. And we're like, okay, my job is done. Turn around, very proud, and it's nice.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what might be easier is if you just bake a fake mouse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like a marzipan mouse. Yeah.
And make a little mouse.
Sure.
And then put that then on the stoop.
Yes.
And then let Risa see it.
Yeah.
And so Risa's like, that's clearly a mouse. I'm going to get close. Then Lisa grabs it.
Yes.
Eats it quickly. And then once again, Risa goes, got it.
You're
on it.
You got it now.
Yep.
You're okay.
Right.
You don't need my help. You guys can survive.
And what you've got to do is make a Turkish Delight flying squirrel. And you've got to put that next to it. And then you pounce on that and
pounce
just devour it in front of Risa. And then she'll also be fine.
I can see that. I can see myself doing that. Because I like both. I like flying squirrels.
Right.
And I like Turkish Delight.
I want to give you a Turkish Delight tip right now.
Okay.
Hot Turkish Delight tip.
Hot tip.
I would have brought you this, but it's too hot in here.
Yes.
And I don't think we would have survived.
Yeah.
There is a place called the Hasty Market that's up the street
here.
It is a place with snacks from many lands.
Okay.
Very diverse lands.
Sure, yeah.
And they have a giant, by that I mean I'm going to show Dave the size, almost a shoebox size, Turkish Delight Dairy Milk Bar.
Wow.
And it is, how much is it for sale? Well, normally it'd be like a $6.99 marked down to, I think that's $2. They got a big stack of them there at the front counter. I almost got it, but again, it would melt here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just letting you know that maybe you want to take a little trip afterwards.
Go there.
Get a little Turkish Delight.
Yeah, yeah.
Skyrocket my way home. Flight, Turkish Delight.
Nice.
So we've talked a lot of pets. Once again, we love hearing about your pets because, you know, we're a couple of big saps.
We are.
You know, we've talked about internet shaming in the past, but, you know, again, like to hear your thoughts on that. And we'd like to hear questions. Hey, let's bring that up. Our 250th episode is going to be a question episode.
Yes, it is.
What that means is we need questions from you. Any kind of questions is fine. Make them personal. Make them general. Make them anything you want
to
know.
You get to be the boss of the show.
Absolutely. And we will answer these questions for an entire episode that will probably be 7 hours long. You can
I don't think we have that many questions.
You can also, we have been getting them pretty regularly for a while. You can also give us answers, and we will have to make up the questions for those answers.
Yes.
Maybe we'll save all the answers for the end. That'll be our speed round.
Okay.
And we'll just wrap up with all of those.
Okay.
So how to reach us? Well, let's put on our repetitive hats and other melted as well, just like our other hats. Oh, well, I'll just tell them to.
We got to stop making hats out of wax.
I do. And marzipan.
And marzipan.
And Turkish delight.
That too.
So sneakydragon.com is our website. That couldn't be easier to remember. That's a good place
to go.
What
was that again? Sorry?
Sneakydragon.com.
Good name.
You can go there. And if you hit on the store, by the way, you can get some delightful shirts. There's some new shirts up there. Why not buy a shirt? You can see some of Dave's artwork, the stuff he's done from previous shows. Beautiful stuff there. You can also find all of our episodes. What's that?
Bleeding. No, I just keep on.
Oh, you can also, okay.
Still bleeding.
Oh, Dave is still bleeding.
It's weird. Because it's right in the joint. So
we should
stop
moving your finger.
I should.
I'm trying to tell the nice people what to, where
I'm
where,
sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
SneakyDragon.com, that's where we have all our episodes. And underneath each of our episodes is a message board area. We love to hear from you there. We'll normally respond. That's probably where we respond the quickest, is there. If you're on Facebook or Sneaky Dragon on Facebook, that's where I put up weird little video clips and nonsense. Stuff that might be relevant, might not be relevant. Dave is trying to cool his hand at a fan that is not working. The fan is behind there, Dave. You're on the wrong
fan. I'm right in the stream.
You're right in the zone?
Yeah,
okay.
Right in the zone.
We have Sneaky Dragon on Facebook, so you can contact us there. If you're on Twitter, it is at @Sneaky_Dragon. We also respond on there. And if you like, use an email, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. That is sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. We have a Tumblr page, sneakydragon.tumblr, blah, 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 boo, boo. And I think that is about it for now. But yeah, we want to talk to you. And if you do have a question, you're going to get what, Dave? What do they get if their question is read on the air?
Well, if you ask a question or send us a question.
Yeah.
I should say.
Which
everyone
is asking a question.
Everyone.
There's a lot of redundancy on this episode.
Everyone who begs a question will receive a comic anthology of our comic jams called We're So Jar, the bumper book of We're So Jar. So it'll have
what
all
does
of,
We're So Jar mean?
We're So Jar, We're So Cool. Is that what you mean? Or
yep,
just what
that
it is?
That was done back when we were cool.
Back
we
when
are
we're cool.
No longer cool.
We're no longer cool.
In any sense of the word. We are incredibly hot. We're sweaty. Dave is covered in blood.
That was going to be that was an alternate name for the show, actually, was We're So Jar.
That's right. I'm covered in tears.
You're covered in tears.
We're all a mess. We are literally, Dave.
Yeah.
We are literally blood, sweat, and tears.
We are literally... Blood, sweat, and tears.
We are.
Wow. So yeah.
Can
so
you say a blood, sweat, and tears song right now?
Spinning wheel, spinning around. Da, 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 da. There you go. How's that? Was that good?
Sure.
Thanks. And when I die, something like that. That was another one they did.
Yeah.
My dad had the best of spinning blood, sweat, and tears, but I only remember spinning wheel because I would sing it when I went fishing with my grandma and get in trouble for scaring the fish by singing. Anyway. So, if you send us a question, you are guaranteed every single person who sends us a question gets some buttons, some other crap, and our bumper book of We're So Jar.
And you get put into a hat.
And every question gets you an entry into our raffle hat, and we will be drawing from that at the end of the show, and the winner will receive a Sneaky Dragon t-shirt, and we'll probably make it your choice, so you can choose any one of our past title cards. And you can choose an image from those, and we'll make you a shirt, a custom shirt for you, the winner of the 250th episode Q&A.
We'll
yes,
do
we
it
have.
Again.
We've done it before, and we will do it again.
And what goes up must go down. Spinning wheel,
spinning around.
Got to go round.
Oh, sorry, got to
it's
go
not
around.
Spinning around. That's why your grandmother was upset with you because you know the lyrics. Very upsetting.
I think we've established. I know very few lyrics.
All right. So, folks, thanks so much for listening. The one little bit of advice we're going to give you is please go right now and kiss your pet on the head, unless it's a fish, in which case, do not. You will terrify it. I've been Ian.
I've been David.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
Bye, everyone.